The headlines this hour: Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, heading a high-level delegation, arrives in the Pakistani capital Islamabad on an official two-day visit. Iran says last week's military operation against Israel was carried out to prevent further aggression by the regime and to restore peace and security to West Asia region. More tensions in the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces launch a raid into the northeastern city of Tubas as three Israelis are injured in an operation by Palestinians in Al-Quds. Well, welcome to our studio here in the capital, Tehran. Thanks for joining us. Iran's president is in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, on an official visit where he is scheduled to meet with the neighboring country's leaders. President Ebrahim Raisi was officially welcomed by Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif after his arrival in Islamabad. The two sides began their talks after the welcoming ceremony. Prior to his departure, Raisi said his visit is aimed at boosting economic and trade ties with Pakistan. He's accompanied by high-ranking delegation as well as business representatives. The Iranian president is also scheduled to visit Sri Lanka after wrapping up his Pakistani visit. Zamir Ahmed Awan is a former Pakistani diplomat who joins us from Islamabad. Welcome to the program. So we're looking at, obviously, the reception, if that's anything to go by, of how warm these two countries' relationship really is, and it is now elevated to the next level. What do you feel is important in this visit? We know perhaps the signing of that gas pipeline deal is one major development once and if it occurs, which all signs point to it to happen. And of course, we have the security that is also high on the agenda, along with the economic aspect of this trip. What do you feel is important here?
People of Pakistan and the government of Pakistan has warmly welcomed the Iranian president. We are neighbors, we are brothers, we are Muslim countries, and we have excellent traditional friendship between Iran and Pakistan. Both countries are facing similar problems and similar fate. We share history, we share culture, we share religion, and we share the problems also. That's natural alliance between Iran and Pakistan. The president of Iran visit to Pakistan is a very, very significant, especially under the geopolitical scenario. It is even more important. Definitely, both countries enjoy extremely warm friendship and very active cooperation. But with this visit, the relationship will be strengthened further. It is expected that the president of Iran will have the meeting with the highest level of the Pakistani leadership, with political leadership and people's representatives. And in the public also, Iran has a very, very good reputation, and people of Pakistan also warmly welcome the president of Iran and his accompanying delegation. It is expected that the gas pipeline, regional security, trade, economics, and especially the situation in Middle East, especially Israeli invasion, Israeli aggression, and genocide in Gaza will be under discussion. Definitely, Pakistan was looking forward for his visit, and there will be an opportunity to develop more trust, friendship, and strengthen the cooperation between two brotherly countries.
Thank you very much, Zamir Ahmed. We appreciate it. Zamir Ahmed Awan, former Pakistan diplomat from Islamabad. Thank you. Moving on with the news, Iran says the response to Israel's attack on the country's embassy in Syria was a legitimate act of deterrence and in compliance with international law. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in a weekly presser that the Operation True Promise was meant to prevent further Israeli acts of aggression and restore peace and stability to the region. Nasser Kanani stressed that the Iranian attacks were successful, despite more than 20 countries working together to repel them. The spokesman further slammed the U.S., the U.K., and France for blocking a Security Council statement that sought to condemn the Israeli strike. He denounced Israeli attacks across the region, including in Syria and in Iraq, saying such strikes violate the sovereignty of UN member states. Meanwhile, Nasser Kanani says Israel is responsible for the massacre and mass burial inside Gaza's Nasser Hospital, adding that the states supporting the regime are also accountable for the crime. He urged the UN chief, the rotating president of the Security Council, and the entire international community to condemn the horrific incident in Khan Yunis. Nasser Kanani also called for tapping into national, regional, and international potentials to prosecute the culprits behind the crime perpetrated at the hospital. Kanani underlined that Israel's systematic and extensive massacres of Gazans clearly amount to genocide and war crimes. The recovery of over 200 bodies from a mass grave inside the Nasser medical complex has also drawn condemnation from Hamas. The resistance movement says the discovery of the mass grave proves the extent of the Israeli crimes and atrocities committed against Palestinians. Hamas says the horrific crimes would have been impossible without Washington's backing for Israel. David Miller, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher, joins us from Bristol. David, welcome. We're looking at tomorrow being the 200th day of this genocidal aggression that's taking place against the Palestinians. And, of course, now you have this discovery of this mass grave, another discovery of this magnitude, practically. What comes to your mind, given this grim milestone of the 200 days coming up tomorrow? What stands out for you at this point?
Well, I mean, the thing which most stands out, I mean, the problem is there is so much horror that the latest horror, it simply adds to the total. So we have an undiluted period of 6 months of horror, increasing stories now of mass graves being found, of executions. We saw reports just the other week of people being taken away in small groups, single shots fired to the head. And of course, this is what's happened with the hospital massacres. We've seen people, as it's been said in the reports, beheaded, skin removed, organs removed, sometimes patients in the hospital buried in makeshift mass graves still attached to their catheters or their drips. I mean, this is truly awful, and I don't believe that anybody who is alive today has seen such horror in any of the conflicts we've seen in the last 50, 60, 70 years. And so we and this is while it's going on. Of course, once it's over, we will find many, many more massacres and horrors will remain to be discovered, including from the records of the occupation forces themselves, as of course happened with the very many massacres around 1948, the Tantura massacre, of course, being only recently widely known about, certainly in the West. So, I mean, this is an ongoing process. But we are also seeing, of course, that Israel, as a state, is now in checkmate. They don't know what to do. They have, of course, cancelled the ground invasion of Rafah, now, although they're now talking up as if they're going to go in again. And the reason that they've done that is because they appreciate that they now are being deterred by the Islamic Republic of Iran's assault on them, and which of course they derided as being 99% unsuccessful. But of course, as everybody knows who knows anything about the air defences of Israel, the 300 drones were sent as decoys in order that the Iron Dome and indeed the other layers of defence supplied by the UK and the US and France, etc., would be overwhelmed. And of course, we all saw the footage of the strikes. Presumably, I don't know if we know this yet, but presumably of hypersonic missiles on the Nevatim base in the Nakhchivan Desert. So we are in a situation where there is horror, and they continue to mete out horror, as they will do, because they recognize that they are under threat, at the same time as they are not able to really expand their war in the way they want to. Of course, they want to expand the war to bring in the Americans, but they can't do it in the north. Hezbollah have them pinned down. They can't do it in Gaza because they know that if they take any further steps, that there is a very strong likelihood of an overwhelming attack from the Islamic Republic of Iran. So we're in a situation where things are awful, but we have some hope that the tide may be turning.
This hope, where is it going to be pinned on? Are we looking at the fact that the Israeli regime itself is going to be deterred, or will it, as usual, be the U.S. that is the game changer here and the one that is the ultimate, I guess, decision maker when it comes to the prevention of Israel for expanding or pushing ahead with this genocidal aggression?
Well, look, I think that the, of course, the U.S. is a sort of outer limit on the activities of the entity, but there are many things that the entity does which the U.S. does not approve of. And of course, the question is only not the question of approval, but the question of when they will actually stop them doing things. So yes, of course, there is that outer limit, but the entity does appear to be in a kind of suicidal mode at present. They feel threatened. They feel that the possibility of the collapse of their project is in the offing. And I think everybody who saw the paragliders and the fences come down on October the 7th had a glimpse of that possibility. And that possibility remains on the table, and they see it. They see it very clearly, and that's, I guess, why for them all bets are off, and that's why they continue with this unbelievably barbaric assault against the Palestinian people, because they think that they have to do things so badly that they will, one, try and eliminate the Palestinian people, and two, try and bring the US into a regional war. That attempt appears to be failing, and that's when, you know, the real question of the end of the entity is squarely on the table.
Thank you very much for that. I'd like to continue this, but unfortunately we don't have time. David Miller there, academic broadcaster and investigative researcher from Bristol. Thank you, David. While Palestinians continue to endure a U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip, the scene of death and destruction on a daily basis. At least three Palestinians were killed in an Israeli strike in the city of Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The Israeli warplanes also targeted two residential buildings in the southern Rafah city, killing 19 Palestinians, including 14 children. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reports that some 48 Palestinians were killed and 79 others were injured in Gaza in the past 24 hours. That brings up the total number of victims since October 7 to more than 34,000. The number of those wounded has also risen to almost 77,000. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said bodies of over 200 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. We earlier talked to our Gaza correspondent Mutia Abu Musaba to get the latest updates regarding Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. Here's what he had to say.
The last night was horrific for the Palestinian people across all areas of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces persisted and continued their airstrikes against all areas of Gaza Strip. And let me begin with the latest attack that targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians here in Deir al-Balah city in the popular market in the central area of Deir al-Balah city. The Israeli warplanes targeted a group of the Palestinian civilians. Multiple and dozens of the Palestinian casualties were left behind that attack. Over the last night as well, the Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike against a residential building in Al-Prouk neighborhood in Deir al-Balah, in the southern part of Deir al-Balah city. The entire residential building was completely destroyed over those attacks. And here, in addition to that, in the central area of Gaza Strip, basically in an Osirat refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes also continued and intensified their airstrikes against the northern part of an Nusrat refugee camp. Several Israeli airstrikes hit that area. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against those areas, including Al-Mughraga neighborhood, Al-Zahra town, and Gaza village area. In addition to that, multiple Israeli shells actually targeted the upper floor of the Al-Awda hospital in an Nusrat refugee camp. The entire solar panels there were completely destroyed and devastated over that attack.
Israeli forces carry out yet another raid in the occupied West Bank amid simmering tensions in the region. The regime's military targeted the northeastern city of Tubas in the raid. During the incursion, explosions could be heard across the city. Israel has stepped up its raids across the West Bank since the regime began its onslaught on Gaza on October 7. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters have carried out an anti-Israeli operation in Al-Quds. According to initial reports, three Israelis were wounded in the suspected car ramming attack. Palestinians say that such moves are in response to decades of Israeli atrocities. The regime has killed at least 482 Palestinians since October 7. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier told us about the fresh Israeli incursions into the cities across the occupied West Bank and Palestinians fighting back.
The Israeli military claims that a Palestinian arrived at one of the, let's say, bus stations in Sa'id al-Quds, and he rammed his vehicle into Israelis there in two different incidents, and that two Israelis had been wounded and transferred to hospitals inside al-Quds. The Israeli military is claiming that this attacker, as they are saying, succeeded to flee the scene and left the area last night, and after the late hours of the night, Israeli settlers raided the village of Burqa near Ramallah. They set ablaze a number of Palestinian vehicles. They tried to burn a Palestinian home, and at the same time the Israeli settlers set fire to a sheep barn, and they slaughtered a number of goats and sheep, according to the residents of Burqa. And at the same time the Israeli forces raided the village of Burqa in order to provide cover for the Israeli settlers. The Israeli forces, meanwhile, stormed several areas across the occupied West Bank. They raided Qalqilia, Tobas, Maythaloun, South Jenin, and northern the occupied West Bank. In Balata refugee camp east, Nablus, exchange of fire have taken place between the Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. And the Israeli troops stormed Douma village south Nablus and arrested a number of Palestinians there.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. That's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention has issued an active genocide alert over the situation for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians across Palestine, the Lemkin Institute said earlier this month. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Recently, violence against Palestinians escalated sharply as large groups of Israeli settler mobs launched attacks on at least 17 Palestinian villages following the disappearance of an Israeli teenager. Zionist settlers killed thousands of chickens and dozens of sheep and stole others. They blocked entrances to villages, set Palestinian homes on fire, burned hundreds of olive trees, injured dozens of Palestinians with live ammunition, and destroyed private Palestinian property, including cars and livestock pens. Zionist settlers were often accompanied and protected by the Israeli regime military. In total, between April 12th and 15th, seven Palestinians were murdered in the occupied West Bank, including at least two children. Palestinian human rights groups Al-Haq, Al-Mizan, and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights recently urged the international community, private actors, and businesses to respond to the widespread violent attacks against Palestinians and their property across the West Bank. Before October 7th, violence in the West Bank was already on pace to eclipse that of any year on record, the Lemkin Institute said, adding, with Israeli military forces killing roughly 200 Palestinians in the West Bank in the first 9 months of 2023. After the Zionist regime began its campaign of slaughter in the Gaza Strip, violence by Israeli regime settlers and the regime itself against Palestinians reached its peak in the West Bank. This made 2023 the deadliest year in the occupied West Bank since the UN monitoring group OCHA began recording casualties in 2005. The Lemkin Institute said, Israeli military forces continue a campaign of genocide and unprecedented violence in the West Bank. On April 12th, a 14-year-old Zionist settler went missing near the village of Al-Mughayr near Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Despite no evidence linking the boy's disappearance or death to Palestinians, hundreds of settlers launched their rampage against Palestinian villages and communities in the West Bank on April 12th and 13th. He was found dead the next day near the settlement outpost of Malachi HaShalom, which was constructed on private Palestinian land in 2015. The Israeli regime army labeled it a terrorist attack as soon as he was found dead, igniting violence from settler mobs against Palestinians. Under the watchful eye and protection of the Israeli regime army, some 1,500 to 2,000 settlers, some of whom were armed, stormed the village of Al-Mughayr over 2 days, Palestinian human rights groups said. Jihad Afif Abu Aliya, 25, was murdered during these attacks. He was shot in his head while protecting one of the homes targeted by Zionist settlers' attacks. The group said when Jihad was shot, he was among a group of around 25 to 27 Palestinians on the rooftop of a Palestinian home, which was surrounded by around 400 Israeli settlers. Settlers continue to fire at Palestinians as they attempt to evacuate Abu Aliya for medical attention, leaving him to bleed for 30 minutes. Zionist settlers completely burnt at least 14 homes and partially burnt 15 others in Al-Mughayr. They also completely destroyed more than a dozen livestock pens and partially burnt 4. Settlers also set fire to around 60 vehicles in the village. Settlers from the Beit El settlement also attacked the nearby village of Beitin on April 13th, where they set fires and vandalized Palestinian property. Palestinian residents of the village tried to confront the settlers to defend their community. The settlers fired live ammunition at them. Among those responding to distress calls was Omar Ahmad Abdul Ghani Hamed, a 17-year-old high school senior and the youngest of his siblings. Recently, a group of Zionist settlers opened fire on Palestinians in the village of Beitin, northeast of Ramallah, killing 17-year-old Omar Ahmad Abdul Ghani Hamed with a bullet to the forehead. He was shot in the head just as he arrived to the scene of the attack. The bullet entered his forehead and exited from the back, according to the Defense for Children International Palestine, which conducts field investigations of the killing of Palestinian children. He was pronounced dead shortly afterward. That same day, Zionist settlers launched violent attacks in Douma, Usra and Sawiya villages south of Nablus in the occupied West Bank. They set fire to 300 olive trees, destroyed livestock sheds and killed 40 sheep, as well as over 10,000 chickens, Palestinian rights groups said. In Douma, hundreds of armed settlers accompanied by Israeli regime troops opened fire on Palestinian residents. The Palestine Red Crescent Society reported that at least five village residents sustained injuries from live ammunition, knife attacks, and physical assaults. The Palestinian human rights groups reported these latest attacks have resulted in the forcible displacement of five families from Douma and another five families from Qusra whose homes have been rendered completely uninhabitable due to these acts of arson. Meanwhile, during a military incursion on April 15th into Rafidia, a neighborhood in the eastern part of the city of Nablus, an Israeli troop shot and killed a Palestinian teenager, striking him in the head from a short distance. An Israeli troop inside a heavily armored military vehicle fatally shot 17-year-old Yazan Muhammad Fawzi Shataye in the chest from a distance of 20 to 30 meters in Nablus recently. The Zionist troop opened fire from inside a heavily armored military vehicle at Yazan Muhammad Shataye 17 while he was allegedly throwing stones at the Zionist regime troops along with other Palestinian youths. 1 week before, on April 8, the Zionist regime forces shot and killed a teenage Palestinian girl at Tayasir checkpoint near Tubas, northeast of Nablus. Asma Emad Saad Daragme, 17, was allegedly attempting to carry out a stabbing attack when the Zionist regime forces shot her several times at a distance of around 10 meters, and that's according to DCIP. The Zionist regime forces refused to allow Palestinian medics to reach or treat Asma, the human rights group said, leaving her to die. DCIP said Asma laid on the ground at the checkpoint, bleeding heavily, according to eyewitnesses. The Zionist regime forces then confiscated her body. The fabricated regime of Israel has been routinely conducting prolonged military raids in towns, cities, and refugee camps across the West Bank, particularly in the north. The Zionist regime military raids often include highly destructive attacks on infrastructure, with the Zionist regime bulldozers damaging water pipes, roads, and power facilities. The Zionist regime army has also been conducting aerial attacks in the occupied West Bank, a practice it revived from the Second Intifada 2 decades ago. Israeli regime troops have killed at least 435 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including 112 children, since October 7th. Additionally, Israeli settlers have killed at least 10 Palestinians, and another 6 were killed by either Israeli army or settler fire, according to documentation by UN Monitoring Group OCHA. The Zionist regime forces have injured nearly 4,900 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7th.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. As the Israeli genocide continues with fresh massacres every day, more and more people around the world are boycotting and protesting against the Zionist regime. In Western countries like the United States, which is the main supporter of the Israeli entity, protests on university campuses are on the rise, and so is the crackdown against them. As activists demand an end to Washington's support for the Zionist regime, the House of Representatives has just approved to give Israel billions of more dollars. The more it kills, it seems, the more the regime is supported by the Western hegemonic front, especially its leader, the United States of America. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Out of Vancouver, Khaled Barakat, spokesperson of the Masar Badil movement. And out of Moscow, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let me start it off in Vancouver with Khaled. Khaled, just today, more mass graves were discovered in Khan Yunis. At the Nasser Hospital, the bodies of hundreds of patients who were massacred by regime forces and simply dumped into mass graves were found. Let's start with your thoughts on the level of depravity of this regime and the way its backers simply look the other way. Okay, it seems I've lost Khaled. Ali, I'm going to pose that question to you. Go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Yes. I mean, it's just every day we discover massacres or new leftovers of other massacres. At previous massacres, they discover mass graves like this, and this is an everyday occurrence, and yet nothing happens really except for that which is done by the resistance axis. As far as the rest of the world powers, they don't really do anything, but they still harp on about fake news that has already been debunked about the mass rapes, about beheaded babies, about all these different types of things. Even the original people who submitted those fake stories have had to admit to their falsity, but only after 30,000 people died, only when it's too late. But still, people are still labeled as this, that, or the other for questioning these official stories, even though the evidence is very easy to see. So it's just a matter, it's just really showing the naked face of the so-called international community. It's ambivalence, it's apathy towards these grave crimes. And really, that's why I think that the world should really consider the resistance axis led by Iran to be the heroic force that is actually trying to put a stop to this genocide. Perhaps the only time that there were no airstrikes on Gaza or even the sound of warplanes flying over Gaza was during the Operation True Promise.
Right.
When Iran's drones and ballistic missiles were flying over the skies of occupied Palestine.
Well, Ali, staying with you, hopefully our technical issues will be sorted out with Khaled. But inshallah, in the middle of the Zionist entity committing more heinous crimes in Gaza, why would the American regime's House of Representatives approve to give $26 dollars more to the Israeli regime. I mean, in the middle of all of this, as there are more protests taking place, why would they do it at this time?
It just goes to show how complicit they are in this genocide, and that this the Zionist agenda is an extension of the American agenda, which is a satanic agenda. They're really there to oppose everything that is godly, everything that is right and wholesome on this earth, and just to carry out as much evil as possible. The depth and the evil of this regime is so deep-seated, it can't even be described in materialistic terms. We're dealing with very, very deep spiritual evil. These are really servants of the devil. The United States can pretend as much as it likes to be a Christian nation, but no Christian nation would put up with mass bloodshed, with a financial system based off of usury that enables them to finance all these things, and at the same time take bread off the backs of the American people. This aid package is not to the benefit of anybody except a very satanic system that sits in Washington, D.C., and basically sucks the blood of the entire world. I mean, the poor people in their own country and the people around the world. We can see rivers and rivers of blood is what fuels the comfort of the United States system. And there's really no rational explanation for what they're doing. These people are absolute psychopaths, and they do not deserve to stay in power, not for one second longer.
All right, stay with me, Ali. Khaled has rejoined us. Sorry, viewers, technical issues that we had. Well, Khaled, does the approval of these new funds by the House mean that the regime is being given a green light to continue with this genocide? I mean, is there any other way of looking at it?
Yes, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Marzia, and to your guest, Brother Ali. What's happening is that the United States is arming the Zionist regime to the teeth, not just with financial funds, but also with military and political support. The United States is adopting a strategy where on the ground they are actually leading this war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people, and the blood of Palestinians are on the U.S. hands. But on rhetoric and in media, they, you know, talk about humanitarian aid and less killing of Palestinian civilians. In reality, the United States and Israel are both committing this genocide against the Palestinian people. The United States, on the actual and real policies, what they do is that they have been blocking any efforts to get a ceasefire. They have been sending Israel all kinds of weapons, approving funds to the Israeli occupation forces, and at the same time blocking even, accepting Palestine as a full member in the United Nations. I mean, to that level, the United States is willing to use its veto power in order to support Israel. Now, why the United States is doing this when we see that the U.S., the American people are actually voicing their rejection to these war crimes and saying that we don't want our tax money to go to a genocide? The reason is because Biden have no, Biden is not the United States. And at the same time, Biden doesn't care if, more 10,000 or 20,000 Palestinians are killed, as long as, Bibi Netanyahu and his government, they're happy and they won't create problems for him in an election time. But at the same time, we have to look at the decision makers in the United States. The U.S. regime has pillars that decide its strategy, the Pentagon, the CIA, the State Department, all of these pillars, the agencies, basically look at Israel as it's their colony, and that the war in the region, it's their war. And that's why the United States is willing to get engaged in bombing anyone in the region, maybe with the exception of Iran, because Iran is a very powerful country. But with the exception of Iran, they're willing to do anything to the region in order to impose their hegemony and their will over the people of the region. That's basically the war that Palestinian people today are subject to is carried by the United States. This war could end in one phone call if the U.S. wants to stop the war, but they don't want to.
Well, Khaled, you talked about, you said that basically because of Netanyahu, Biden wants to keep this war going. What about the American people themselves? This is, as you said, an election year. And I mean, how can a part of Congress totally ignore the growing calls by the American people that are demanding a ceasefire and an end to support of the Israeli regime?
I mean, if anything, the heroic October 7th military offensive carried by the Palestinian resistance against the Zionist regime have exposed the so-called liberal democracy and Western democracy. And that is because the people could say actually something and their regimes say something else. Their government actually take a different kind of position. And that tells you that the public opinion in, let's say, the UK, how important is it for, you know, the ruling class of the UK? It's nothing. You know, millions of people in London have been talking about, you know, stop the genocide, stop the war crimes against the Palestinian people, and the government in UK don't care about their opinion at all. The other thing is that we have been also seeing how much this imperialist, colonialist powers are exposed when it comes to the issue of human rights. The United States today, Germany, and these, you know, fascist regimes, they cannot lecture anyone about human rights and about human dignity and about, you know, peace and justice. You know, no one is going to believe them because the, you know, the world is watching and seeing that these war crimes against our people in Gaza, especially after 17 years of siege, is carried at the hands of Germany and France and UK and the United States, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Jordan. I mean, imperialist power and their puppet regime in the area. And the only power today that is standing up against this vicious criminal camp is Iran and the camp of resistance in the region. They are getting, you know, the support of the people of the region. I challenge them to do a referendum, you know, in Egypt and see that the vast majority of the people in Egypt support Iran and not the, you know, Egyptian regime. They support Yemen and not this fascist, you know, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. The same goes on the vast majority of the Muslim world and the Arab world. Today, we are entering a new stage where the Zionist colonialist project is crumbling from within because it's a very corrupted regime. And as we expected, that it's going to start cracking, you know, the Israeli army have failed in all of their objectives in the last 6 months except killing people, but they, the military operation that they declare and its objectives have failed. The Palestinian resistance still very strong in Gaza and in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, and they are actually not just winning the hearts and the minds of the people in the region, but also the hearts and the minds of the people of the world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
already let's look at what's happening inside the U.S. itself, because not only are activists breaking up meetings, boycotting and sanctioning activities on American university campuses, they're growing, but Columbia University has become the center as students have been protesting the university's investment in Zionist entity. Now the university and police have cracked down hard on these students. I mean, why? What happened? Because, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, especially on university campuses, is something that a lot of students perhaps thought that it was really their right to have and to participate in.
In the United States and in the liberal world in general, all these freedoms are only the freedom to pursue falsehood. So what the Columbia University students are essentially doing is reestablishing what academia, what higher education is supposed to be, which is a free and open playing field to seek the truth, not to drown in falsehood. Unfortunately, since the Rockefeller family took over the educational system in the early 1900s, the educational system has been manipulated in order to support certain narratives. Rather than seeking the truth, students are essentially told pre-fabricated narratives on many different subjects. For example, even in the medical field, they're taught only that pharmaceuticals are the best. They're not taught about nutrition, all these other type of things. In the realm of history and politics, they're taught the imperialist version of history, the Zionist version of history. Even the so-called radical politics of universities, Trotskyism, is labor Zionism, basically the idea that everybody's imperialist, America's imperialist, Iran is imperialist, and it opposes all authority, even the authority of God himself. That's why you have people going into university and then coming out more dumb and more immature than when they came out. The only thing they know how to do is tell you how many hundreds of genders there are. She, her, he, him, you're a frog or something like that. I don't know. And they get very childishly angry if you disagree with them. That's the so-called radical politics. So what the Columbia University students are really showing what it really means to be a revolutionary, what it really means to be a truth seeker, because they're not just demanding these kind of like liberal Zionist platitudes like ceasefire now or stop apartheid or all these other kinds of mid-level slogans. They're actually standing in favor of the resistance. They're raising the names of the resistance and showing that free people around the world respect the resistance, even in the hearts of America, and they understand who is the real terrorist. They understand who is the real hero in this equation. So they're not even self-censoring themselves in order to appeal to the sensibilities of different liberal, the liberal cosmopolitan liberal wing of the imperialist pie. So it's really what they're doing is brave, and I think that's why there's such a big crackdown, because they're not abiding to liberal Zionist narratives, and they're breaking down this kind of Rockefeller model of education by really establishing what it means to stand for the truth and to oppose falsehood, which is what academia really should be, but it hasn't been for many decades now.
Right, indeed. Well, Khaled, students from other universities have joined in solidarity with Columbia. How afraid do you think the powers that be are as they witness this growing awareness of young people and the risk of losing the narrative which they have promoted for so long?
Well, the United States regime is absolutely are in fear and scared because of the student movement. The solidarity with Palestine in U.S. campuses did not start on October 7th, but we have been witnessing a qualitative work by the students, brave students from all walks and different backgrounds, Palestinians, Arabs, non-Arabs, Jewish, brave students who are part of this movement in campuses. And the United States gets even more worried when the universities like Harvard, Columbia, Yale, some of these universities, that they understand that these students in 5 years from now, they are going to be leading, and they will be in positions of lawyers and judges and, very important positions. And they see that also the younger generation in the United States, the vast majority of them, they don't want to just end the Israeli occupation, they want to end Israel as a Zionist racist regime. And this call of liberating Palestine from the river to the sea is very central in the student movement and in general in support, you know, the movement, solidarity movement with the Palestinian people. And this is really changing the entire situation, because what's happening is that you get like Canadian campuses calling for the boycott of Israeli academia, Israeli institutions. And these universities are not just an echo or an expression of a younger generation, especially the youth, but also the university's faculties and academia are also getting involved in more support of the Palestinian people. And this is affecting the internal situation in the United States when it comes to the study of colonialism, you know, the history, and all these disciplines that the Zionists fear. Like when you study the history of our area, West Asia. That's why, for example, you see the Zionist movement in campuses are trying to block any establishment of a serious study center that focus on Iranian studies, you know, to study Iran. They don't want people to know anything about Iran, the history, the people, the culture, the poetry, the literature, you know, the civilization of Iran. They want Iran image to be in the U.S. media as this country that is just supporting, you know, those who hate Israel and the United States. And that's the image they try to promote. But they are also failing on this front as well, because also of new technology and social, you know, media and the creativity of the younger generation in expressing their position against war crimes, genocide, racism. This is also an issue very important because it raises internal issues in the continent here, and that is the struggle of black people in this continent, the black liberation movement, the native indigenous struggle in this continent, and the Palestinian struggle is very much connected to all of these issues. Mm-hmm. So what we are seeing in campuses is coalitions of all different struggles that is opposing the same enemy, and that is the capitalist system in the U.S. and the White House.
Right. Well, Ali, another part of the bill approved by the House of Representatives, which will go to the Senate next week, and will give $60 billion more to Ukraine, $26 billion more to Israel, is a ban on TikTok in the U.S. with its Chinese owner. Now, if the bill passes Congress and is signed into law, the Chinese owner will have 9 months to sell TikTok. Of course, if he doesn't, then it will be banned. By the way, TikTok has been one of the main forms of information on Palestine for the under-30 crowd, and over 170 million Americans use TikTok. Your thoughts?
The TikTok bill is very, very dangerous. The ban on it was actually promoted by AIPAC, which is a foreign lobby group promoting a foreign country, although America is part of their, you know, they have a kind of conjoined twin, you know, existence with the American empire. But this bill in particular, it's not just about TikTok. There's basically going to include the ability to ban any site that it may or not be hosted on in so-called enemy countries. So, for example, Press TV could be banned, or other outlets, or even independent outlets. For example, my website could be banned, even though, you know, for whatever reason, because they don't want people to hear the truth. They don't want the Iranian perspective to be heard, as they're preparing now for a false flag attack that they're probably going to blame on Iran or Hezbollah. We can hear these echoes in the media that, oh, there's these Hezbollah terror cells in the U.S., even though Hezbollah has nothing to do with killing civilians. It only operates in the Levant region. And as far as terrorism is concerned, it's the one that defeated terrorists. It defeated ISIS in Syria, and it defeated the Zionist terrorists in South Lebanon. So 100%, just as Mossad has done false flags like the 9/11 attack, 7/7, and others, they're going to kill Americans again, and they're going to blame it on Hezbollah. And any website that tells the truth about it, if it's originating from a country that America doesn't like, they're going to erase it.
At the end of the day, just 30 seconds, Ali, I don't have much time. At the end of the day, do you think they will be successful in encountering this awareness that is taking place, not only in the United States, but across the world regarding Palestine and also their own countries and what their governments have been doing?
I believe it's impossible because God is the one who guides, and there's a great awakening going on. And as the money is being sucked from the American people's pockets towards Ukraine, towards Israel, they're going to be dissatisfied with their own government, and eventually the chickens are going to come home to roost. And the Federal Reserve, the United States government, are all going to find their day of reckoning at the hands of at least some parts of the American people who have some decent hearts and are God-fearing.
All right, and on that note, thank you both for being with me. Khalid Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badil Movement, Vancouver. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief, Basir Press, out of Moscow. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaam alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hossein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about the concept of humanity in the verses of the Holy Quran and the teachings of the religion of Islam. In the previous episodes, we talked about the position of intellect as one significant dimension and aspect of human soul, the position that it has, intellect, in the verses of the Holy Quran and the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. And it's been 2-3 episodes that we are talking about one beautiful hadith from the Prophet, and we are trying to connect